Hello, and welcome to Social Justice Matters, a podcast from Social Justice Ireland. I'm Colette Bennett. It's a worrying time out there at the moment, particularly for those who are vulnerable, those who are immunosuppressed, and older people. One organisation that is providing crucial support to older people is the charity Alone. Alone is a member organisation of the National Public Health Emergency COVID-19 Subgroup for Vulnerable People, and is working in collaboration with the Department of Health and the HSE on a coordinated national response to support older people who have concerns, may be at risk, or who have contracted the coronavirus, COVID-19. One of these critical supports is the operation of a national support line to complement the clinical advice and information being provided by the HSE through its website and helpline services. The Alone support line is available 7 days a week, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. on 0818 222 024. Where professional staff will be available to answer questions in relation to the coronavirus, give advice, and where necessary, provide reassurance. This episode is the seventh in our seminar series, where we publish some of our most important or relevant presentations from past Social Justice Ireland events. In this podcast, we will be revisiting our annual social policy conference from November 2019 and hearing from Sean Moynihan, CEO of Alone, on revolutionising ageing at home together and the wonderful supports available from Alone services.
Listen, good morning. Great to be here this morning. I'm struck by a few things. James, and statistics earlier on said is that the number of over 80s will go up by 240%. And actually, we were looking at numbers in-house, and 45% of all the people we work with are over 80. So, unfortunately, that's where a push and a reaction from our type of sector comes. The other thing I was looking at in some of the stats there is that 13% of women went to college in 1991. And I come not far from here, and I remember my sister in the mid-80s finishing school and getting into UCD, and it was sort of news in the area at the time. Do you know what I mean? It was a case of, you know, because I'd say the percentage in our area was a bit lower. And finally, just to thank Sean for the invite to speak here today. And but Sean makes you work for a living. So he says, and I'm the type of person who gets asked to do something, says yes, and then thinks about it later and usually regrets it. So the last time I was here, I 3 weeks ago, I abseiled off the building. Another time I said yes and maybe should have thought about it a bit more. But Sean asked, and then of course you say yes, and then he says, well, we need around 6,000 words because you have to do it before a publication rather than a PowerPoint. So I'm waiting on my results now. Will I get it? I'm hoping for a 2-2 at least, Sean. Do you know what I mean? So we see how we get on, you know? So listen, I'm going to cover, I suppose, the challenges of success. We have an older population. The graph on people living is longer. And that's the best outcome, let's be honest, right? So ultimately is that produces some challenges. And where I'm going to cover 3 or 4 areas today, obviously we won't be able to get into huge depth in all of them because we're going to cover a few. But as I said, look, it's great to be here. Appreciate. Hard to follow Colette. But also just to acknowledge the room here. You know, an awful lot of people here, you know, and recognised faces have been involved in social justice campaigning and all of that for an awful long time. And ultimately is you hold a huge ground that is really important. And the voice of that is never more important than it is now, you know? And another, where we support older people to age at home, I suppose the thing I'd like to say in some ways is, I wish we weren't a charity. You know, I wish nobody over 70 had to come and rely on that support. You know, a lot of people who come to us have had struggles all their lives, and old age has made it a little bit difficult. For others, it's things that have happened along the way, whether that's bereavement, whether that's financial issues, whether that's health issues. And ultimately, being a charity has effect on the people we serve and how they feel about it, but also has an effect on us, how as an organisation we're perceived, how we're treated, how we're supported. So I think it's something, you know, that we need to be conscious for ourselves of always, because we want people, regardless of circumstances, to get the best service they can get. And in some ways, we're always challenging ourselves, both our staff and our volunteers, that ultimately is to try and look at ourselves more as an NGO and a service provider than necessarily a charity, which is the only legal status available to us. I think for, you know, I think for this room here, the main thing is whether it's an ageing population, whether it's health and housing, where this room and the people here is your job is to help people like me, you know, and also to have the, to educate us to get the language, that we get the narrative back on housing, we get the narrative back on health and ageing, that ultimately maybe has been lost. You know, people mentioned privatisation and commercialisation of housing. We need to grab those narratives back. I always think, I was 30 before I came into working into social care, and I think coming into social care changed me. And I think everybody I ever come in contact, people who come and volunteer for us, and we've over 2,000 now, they know that coming in contact with people actually changes our view. And part of our role, I think, is for people who maybe don't understand what we say, our job is to try and teach them and bring them and let them come in contact with that. So ultimately is you know, we can get control of that narrative and ultimately plan for the future. I suppose it's good to start with a person. And this is actually Doreen, she's 85. I'm always struck, when I saw this picture, and I'm always struck that no matter what age, they seem to have institutional chairs no matter where you go. But anyway, Doreen and, has allowed us to share some of the stuff. So we work dormy, she lives on her own, she never married, no children, 85 in a lot of cases, some macular degeneration, some sight loss. So our support coordination, our staff have gone in and supported and dealt with some housing issues, some transport issues, some finance issues, and ultimately then we've provided a volunteer who supports and visits, provide company, but also links her into social activities in the community and does all the silly things like putting labels, because of the eyesight, putting labels on things and everything else, so that thing is. And ultimately is where Doreen would be in hospital because of certain frailty issues a couple of weeks a year. She spends most of the time at home, and ultimately we wrap the support part around us. Us as an organisation, we probably keep to the original values of what we did, which is, you know, to be innovative, to reach out, to address the emerging needs. But ultimately is how we do that, I suppose, has changed over the years. My own philosophy is about not going around blame. It's not a matter of staff good, or shall we say volunteers good, staff bad, or statutory good, or, you know, NGOs, you know. NGOs good, statutory is bad. I think there's good people in every walk of life, and ultimately is we're always looking to connect with them, and ultimately is create a philosophy where if we can expose and the facts back us up, we can bring about the changes that we want. So I think just outline a couple of challenges that come from the success of an ageing population is housing and living conditions, housing support, and the ability to age in place. The ability of all the Doreens to get those supports, whether it's health or social, in their own community, in their own home. Loneliness, a huge emerging need, and I'll come back to it. Finance and pensions and planning for the future, looking at the stats there. Technology, which I actually think is we can use to turn the whole system on its head. That's what technology in so many other sectors has done. It sort of disrupt the whole system. So there's no reason we can't do it for the capacity for all older people. And the last one there, just to cover a few sentences on it, is sort of ageism and equality. Very early this morning when I was doing this, right, I put it on Wikipedia. I looked up the Department of Justice and Equality. Right, and it had the main on the Wikipedia page. It had their main objectives. There was nothing about equality. Quite interesting. All security, all justice based. You know, so it didn't make the cut. So it's quite interesting. So I think for us is we all know language is really important. We mean this group more than anybody else. We also know that whether you take the US or the UK, things that are said 5 years ago are. Things that are being said now, you couldn't say 5 years ago. I think if we look a different way in this room where the influence is and social policy, what we've got to be looking at is the things we want people to say in 5 years, the change we want to bring. And I think in ageism and in the language we use around older people, we need to get a policy on where that's going to be through the department. And I think the other thing is there's things like the National Positive Ageing Strategy, but it's 6 years old and it, as such, has no funding. And it's left to a lot of partnership work going on, but no actual funding to bring it around, even though you see the large graphs of the impact of an aging society. And just, I was looking, I didn't know you were chairing today, so thank God I pulled these out of the paper and I was looking at it earlier saying, is there anything from the Examiner? So there you go. Anyway, a small bit of panic, but anyway, got myself into trouble again. Anyway, so I think the thing is, I'm rereading my own stuff. But I think what we've got there is that ultimately the most positive story there is at the end, which is about people being active in the workplace, and they still managed to put ancient in the sentence. Do you know? So I think we're really a little bit immune to this. Do you know what I mean? The pictures of the hands, the bed blockers, the language around that. Do you know, bed blockers is going out now, and now we're talking about delayed discharges. Do you know, so have we changed the language now in some areas, but not the systems? Do you know what I mean? And I think that the point is, to me, what this all does is it attributes blame to an individual. Do you know what I mean? Whether you're consuming pensions or health services or everything else is, if this language is a thing. And I think this is where we need to claim the narrative, and we need, for any of these issues, if we want the changes, whether it's in housing or health or any of these things that's around older people, we have to get the language. I'm always struck that basically is the amount of older people and children living in deprived circumstances, but it's not really in the chatter of people. You know, I don't know about you, but a lot of my friends, as soon as, you know, I start talking any of these stats or facts, you know, you know, you could be on a match day here if you bring anything up, like people shut down a little bit. And we have to grab hold of that, you know. And really what we have to say that an ageing population is neither a catastrophe, you know, it's not a catastrophe, it's not a time bomb. It's a positive, it's the best outcome we can achieve. And it is success, you know. So ultimately for these challenges to be addressed, we've got to get rid of pension time bombs and the wrinkles and all the hands. So moving into facing some of the challenges, right? So I think around housing, I've got this in a different order, but anyway, that's fine. I suppose, go back to people again. And this is Joseph and Anne, even though it's a nice couple, a nice picture of them. They're not actually a couple, right? But they're people who've ended up in our housing coming from different directions, you know? So Joseph ended up in homeless services, because of notice to quit. And unfortunately for us, that is a huge thing. Older people have always struggled in high rents. And I remember years ago, we ran a campaign called We're Not Going Back, because ultimately as people ended up in the poorest conditions, in the smallest, in the cramped. And ultimately he fell foul of that. And we have people now coming, you know, doing the couch surfing in their 70s. We have the people, hundreds of people on notices to quit. Yeah, compared to the Clwyds, we're a relatively small approved housing body, but literally for every house, because we also do the support elements, we've got 100 to 200 people, depending on the location, looking for each house. And that is just building up underneath the surface. It's just building up underneath the surface. And Anne came ultimately from us, from a similar, but ultimately is as we took her out of a private rented who was really in just really poor conditions, when her health and her frailty meant that she couldn't stay there any longer. I always feel, you know, it's hard to get noticed to quit probably in your 30s. It's really sort of fairly savage in your 80s, and so much of this stuff comes around safety and security and people realising that there's a difference between renting, as we go to a society that the graph around house ownership drops at a percentage a year and everything else is, you know, there's an awful lot of people very concerned in their mid-50s all wondering, like, will they ever get to retire? What will happen to them? If they ever get sick, what will happen to them? And that's the fear people are living with. And I think we ignore the fact that the part of the dynamic around housing is power. Your landlord is a very powerful individual in your life. You know what I mean? And if something goes wrong on your journey of life, which it does for most of us at some stage, on bumps in the road, it's how do you deal with that, you know? And I can go backwards as well as forward. Right, so I think the point I'm trying to get across is the housing crisis of what people are talking about really is there, and I'll come back to it in a second, is really there also for older people. The whole social transfer, the whole social protection system is all based on house ownership, and as that changes, we're going to have to play. We still, I think, again, taking the ability for us to bring about change. Recently, under National Positive Ageing Strategy, involved with 15 organisations, we were looking at the grant scheme, and this is where we took it on, was because I have a different version of this, would you believe? I have a different version here than there. Anyway, so listen, these things happen. So what I'd say to you is under the HAPI schemes, what you have is around, or under the HAPI data, the government data, around 25% of older people have housing difficulty problems, and around 20% have facility problems. So ultimately, we took on a piece of work for the Department of Health, and we got 15 agencies all to map, and we mapped every scheme or every local authority what was done, and we found each one had the grant scheme and did it differently. We've produced new forms. Social Justice Ireland were involved in it, 30 organisations ultimately is, and now we've got some process. And the challenging thing for all of us is we had to define the problem. We then had to demonstrate the solutions. We then had to present it. We had to then go round to the different departments affected by it. And then ultimately we bring about the change. That's a big burden to put on all of us, but it's probably the thing we're going to have to do if we want a lot of what's outlined to be changed, to be done, rather than we have to take it all the way to actually handing people the solutions and really showing them what can be done. So on housing, demand. So again, with Social Justice Ireland and a few other people, we did a housing demand for the next 10 years for older people. And what you suddenly realise is the numbers are getting into the size and scale of rebuilding Ireland with that ageing population. And I think if I look at the end, the grant scheme, we were saying, is around 84 million, so we can get people so they can stay in their own homes. You're looking there, and a huge opportunity. People talk about downsizing. It's really, we talk about right sizing because it's really the size that suits people, and some people need slightly bigger now, older age. But ultimately, that produces an opportunity, maybe of 59,000 units. Depends what studies you read, whether 10 or 15% of older people would right size if it was in their community. And that produces an opportunity maybe for, could be the private sector, could be for the larger AHBs, to produce something there. And I think if you look at the social housing demand, we're looking there at around 41,000 units. I think the reality of it is the graph on homelessness that Colette showed earlier for older people is on the rise sharply. But it's only because that it isn't. The reason we don't have older people's hubs, just responding to that at the moment, is because for 20, 30, 40 years, the councils built housing for older people. Special needs housing was older people, homeless and disabilities. And we knew that. Sometimes we have to look back to relearn what we forget, and it has to re-emerge. And so ultimately is we knew that. And we have to go back and rebuild them now. Because other than that, we will have those homeless hubs for older people within the next 4 to 5 years. It's building up underneath. So what I'd say to you is, and we can do that. This, obviously, units for older people tend to be a bit smaller. You can get higher density. So it also produces an opportunity to get things done and to build older people in the community. And keeping older people in the community keeps the community healthy and well, and it keeps the pensions in the community, and it keeps, you know, older people tend to spend the money locally. So what I'd say to you there is for us, we're looking at those demands. Nursing homes, no matter what we do, you know, if we keep it at the European average of around 4%, the demand both for housing and for nursing homes and for supports in the community is going to keep rising. That is the challenge of success, you know, and we just have to take it on like that, you know. What I would say to you is for us, the future is sort of where that 4,300 is housing with on-site support. It's that gap where, you know, creating a positive choice. You're somebody, maybe you've gone into hospital and ultimately is you may not be able to return home, but your only choice at the moment is a nursing home. And we produce housing, people's own front doors, where we have the supports on site, and we produce a positive choice in what might be a challenging situation, or somebody at home who for certain reasons can't stay there. So for us, what we'll do is try and produce that. And we're on a demonstrator project, but beyond that, we've been talking to the government departments, we've been talking to you about producing financial models, campaigning so we get new models of that. For us, we hope that we might get to build around 320 of them, even though the demand is four trains. And I think the point of being an NGO is if we can break that ground, we know the larger AHBs, and we know the private companies will come in after. But it usually takes the NGO sector to take the loss in time and effort that it takes to break and bring something in to allow something to happen, and you produce the thin end of the wedge and others come in behind. And I suppose success for all of us is quite a broad street. If we don't get to do large numbers and other people do, ultimately for us with housing with on-site support, that's actually success. So that, I think there I then go around looking at, I suppose, home supports and abilities. What I'd say to you is what we need to sort of have a look at is as I said, nursing homes, right? We're going to have to create new models of them. We're going to have to put a situation that is less institutionalised on it. But ultimately, the good news is only 4% of older people end up in nursing homes. So this is all about the transition as a spending of the money around healthcare into the community, where 96% of people will be and 96% of the older people will be. That is the aim of Sláinte Care. Sláinte Care, in fairness, huge amount of momentum, huge amount of effort, a lot to be admired in what people are doing in the department and everything else. But the main thing was it was to have a transition fund. There's not going to be possible to take money from the acute system and put it into the community. The whole thing of Sláinte Care was it has a transition fund where you put in extra money so that ultimately you can make that transition happen. And again, it's a challenge because obviously of the success of an ageing population. But again, and there are ways, there's 20, I'm part of a group and I'm sort of linked with the Department of Health for 23 organisations. We're all campaigning under Sláinte Care for the right to home care. And there will be now a practice area. And ultimately is again, NGOs sort of building on the knowledge we get from think tanks like Social Justice, like other people that are here today and usually robbing their stats and their work and everything else is, right? We then produce some position papers and we put into the department what we think that right to home care looks. And it's all the service providers, all the national aid charities trying to speak with the one voice of how we can bring about that change, how we can bring that narrative around what the needs of the people we say, service are, you know? And so ultimately is how do we do that, you know? And so much of what we're trying to do is again turn around and say that ultimately is it's about building the infrastructure to bring people home, and home care is that strategic anchor to make that happen, and that again is part of the success of aging is that a percentage of people will be frail. And I'm always interested in the stats and lingo bingo that goes on. I was looking at the numbers, you know, for all the announcement and didn't look up many there had been, but all the announcements around home care packages, million, you know, people throw out millions of hours and everything else. When you look at it, June, July this year, there was 900 less home care packages given to older people than there was the previous year. You know, when you boil it down, 900 less. But yet we're in a place where it's government policy for 30 years for people to age at home. And that's the challenge we have. Loneliness for us is a huge issue on the fact that we've grown in my time from around 50 volunteers to around, I think it's around 2,300, right? Volunteers are like sheep, they move around. The count is always changing because, you know. So what I'd say to you is that, you know, around 10% of older people are lonely somewhere all of the time. And that has a devastating effect on how they live. I think one of the stats people put, or was put up earlier, was that ultimately the effect of on your health if you live on your own, and ultimately is you know, there's a lot of pain and suffering goes with people living on their own. What happens is, I was in Mayo on Friday, and I think it's nearly 50% of people live on their own and big geographical distances, and people suffer in silence behind the doors. And ultimately is I think that's why sometime in the campaigning a lot of this type of stuff is hidden. So for us, where our plan is to grow to around 9,000 volunteers with phone services that ring people every day, prompts around health and well-being, and ultimately putting back into the community those informal supports that were once there. As we get the right to home care, wrapping the community around people that were once there. Now, if we get to 9,000, we'll get to around 10% of the demand. So hence, we have an arm that trains and resources other agencies to do what we do. I think pensions, the reality is, I think, again, people here have done an awful lot of work on that. And I think if you have a look there around the percentages of GDP that it's going to be, you know, it's from 5 to 7.5%. Surely that's something we can plan and cope for over many years, you know? And I wonder sometimes about, you know, the vested interest in that language of pension time bombs when these are the type of stats and facts. Do you know what I mean? So ultimately is who benefits from maybe some of the fear that goes from that. And I think some of the fear around home care, some of the fear around pensions, all that, actually puts people off actually tackling problems, do you know? So the other thing I always say, think about this stuff is the third highest thing people come to us for finance is support around finance. As an agency, we do services like we do for Doreen and provide housing and other things. But ultimately, so we don't actually give out money like maybe some other traditional charities. So we're very much thing as this. But ultimately, we're struck that the amount of people who live on the pension, you know, this time of the year, heating bills, anything goes wrong, an appliance breaks down. You know, again, the percentage of people living on their own, the pension is literally on the poverty line. Well, at the same time, is we've also people and women especially who've been disadvantaged over the years with the with contributory element to that, and we're sort of very conscious that the numbers have continue rising to us that ultimately have a situation there. So I think again, the facts don't bear out some of the fear. There, yes, there's challenges in the pension area, but I think there are things that policymakers can address. For us, a huge thing is, and this is where we think we can bring about huge changes in the challenges, is technology. You know, and I suppose older people and technology aren't necessarily something people put together, you know? And I think that's, again, about challenging narratives. It's about showing what can be done. And again, as an NGO, if I start in the middle there, some of the work our support coordinators are doing is we're working with older people in emergency departments. So we're part of the discharge plan. So if you imagine the medical health is doing that and trying to keep people get people well again, well, we're working out how are we going to get you home, what's this transport when you get home look like, what is your housing situation, social. But now we're trying to introduce technology that ultimately is how do people maintain themselves health and well at home. For the likes of the approved housing bodies, we're looking at sort of using narrow band where we can take certain information around either whether it's carbon, occupancy, other things that housing groups are interested in, but also make health inferences so we can look at that. And I suppose around the older person, our sort of vision of what we're working on and some support around launch of care is imagine a situation and whereas my watch tells the time twice a day, other people wear Fitbits, etc., right? Ultimately is imagine a situation where we have somebody comes home from hospital or we give them a Fitbit, they have a mobile phone. I suppose I was thinking about this morning, how to explain it. If you walk by Arnott's, right? If you walk by Arnott's and you have your mobile phone in your pocket, right? The fact that you walk by it every day, that data is available to, if you never switch on your phone, that data is available to be sold. Arnott's could buy it, Brown Thomas could buy it, right? You all look like Brown Thomas people to me. But anyway, but the thing about it is right? But that data is available. Now, if you imagine somebody older would have a mobile phone, right? And we have a Fitbit, and we've got something like an Echo or a Sounder. You have a situation that instead of having to wait till people get sick, we can be taking vital signs. The older person doesn't even have to know how to operate it if they don't want to. They can manage their own health if they want, you know what I mean, by watching things and reaching out to people. But with that, we can get the prompt to come from the Echo to say, you know, have you taken the medication? You know, the heat, the temperature is too low, turn on the heating, all of these things. And we can revolutionize, because at the moment is an older person lives at home, and the way I look at it is and they're in green, or else there's a crisis and they're in hospital. So ultimately is if we build the technology, the people, the community, which is for us is the 9-10 volunteers and the other 40 agencies, and then the right to home care together, we can actually change things and we can meet these challenges, you know, and that's ultimately what technology has done in many other sectors, and there's no reason it can't be done there. And the reason we're putting so much energy into it again is everybody knows there's huge value here, but it's always the NGOs, it's always the social policy people who have to go in first, because ultimately people will only go in when this stuff is proved, when this stuff is proved. So impact is what we're trying to do there for us, and that's the most important thing. And most important thing for us is whether it's our support coordination, one point of contact, and working with all the other NGOs, whether that's our support and befriending, where the community volunteers in the community, whether it's our housing, and we'll focus on housing with support going forward, or the technology, where we're providing technology and training to others. The main thing for us is creating models. Models other people can copy. You know, we've around 20 organizations use the same management information system we've built. So then the idea is whether you're in an area we operate around the country or you're somebody else, that you get the same service. We're trying to get the approved housing bodies to sort of anybody who's providing housing to realize that you need support. So if we create the support coordination, the phone service, the volunteers, and we get people to operate by area rather than the 400 approved housing bodies all getting support workers themselves. Because again, with that graph, everybody's going to have people who are over 80 or people who are going to have frailty issues. And that's just a challenge of success. And it's something to be celebrated. But it is something we just have to do something about. And again, learning from a lot of people in this room, we set off to say, well, capacity is a problem. So we set off on a project around mapping. And we nicked a staff member from the Department of Health who'd been working on stuff for a few years. And ultimately what we've been doing is, where are all the over 65s? Where are the over 75s? Where are the over 85s? Where are the hotspots? Then we look at your economic social position. It's usually, unfortunately, a predictor of your health. I was amazed reading something from Tilda that the economic social position of your parents at 5 actually is worth 2 years of your life, which is really a bit scary, do you know what I mean? But so what we're doing is mapping where that is, where all the older people are attained. So as we roll out services, what we're doing is we're going into where the older people are first. And we're looking at people who can't drive, the areas who can't drive and everything else. And with that, we're mapping where the housing needs are for older people, where the housing with on-site support needs are with that. But also then, it allows us to start the conversation with the other NGOs. You've got one that struck me, a conversation recently was in Offaly, and there was 4 phone services that support older people in Offaly, and somehow they managed not to cover the whole Offaly, right? So ultimately is we all sat down, we just realigned everybody's geography. We said, look, we won't run a phone service in Offaly. We provide them with the technology to do it. And then what we did is we wrapped around visiting volunteers and support coordination. And that, I think, is the future for the NGO sector. That's what we're trying to do, because the capacity is beyond any organisation. But if we're going to have the belief that we can meet these challenges and support our old population, it's about doing things a little bit differently than we would. And it is that thing of creating models where you think nationally and act locally and use the capacity that's in the community while also using the data. That's just a list of sort of partnerships and some of the people we're working with around the country, just to illustrate the point. I think the thing that we have on this is, I suppose, that's our strategic plan for the next few years. But the main thing, what we're trying to do, is create a network that links into the older people, or that the older people can reach out into when they require it. And whether that we can get multiple strategies down through the front door. I sometimes look at it as a bit like connecting older people, a bit like being the ESB, going back to the previous partnership sides. There's lots of great services people do that we don't do. But ultimately, maybe we've contact with a lot of the older people. So ultimately, is we want to, when we go through the front door, bring all their services. When they go through the front door, bring ours. And ultimately, that's what we're trying to do. So, in summary, and I'm looking at a different summary. So anyway, that's my fault. I must have sent over the wrong one. Okay. I suppose in summary, I suppose what we're trying to do is get the statutory home care scheme to meet the challenges. We're really supportive of the likes of Sláinte Care. In fairness to government parties, cross-party came together and did something really good. Ultimately now is we've got to give them the courage to actually implement it and the encouragement to create things. We need to look at the housing options for older people, and we need to realise that there's huge demand there. And that ultimately, the next Rebuilding Ireland, if that's not some type of heresy to suggest there be another one, right, is that it focuses on an older and ageing populations and the singles and the couples, and that ultimately from that we solve the housing crisis from that, and that ultimately we need the services there, and that, you know, that the state pension is benchmarked and planned for. And that ultimately is that structures and things like the National Positive Ageing Strategy, we produce an implementation structure. Lastly, I'd say is it's really about changing a mindset. These are challenges, yes, but they're not beyond the capabilities of the individuals in this room and in other rooms. And ultimately is people here are so much at the avant-garde of setting the narrative, and I think that's nearly the most important thing we need, is to get the language right, get the vision right, because I honestly believe there are people in so many of the statutories want to achieve these things. I also believe that the general public want the same things we want, because they also want them for their families and friends, and ultimately is we have to help to make that possible. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Please don't forget, Alone's coronavirus support line is open 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday to Friday on 0818 222 024. Until next time, stay safe.